Hello, this is Darius from Dyslexia Explored. I am so pleased to have with me an entrepreneur, a comic book artist, and a Scot, fellow Scot here. And I really want to introduce you to you today to Rossi, who was our first ever podcast guest 2 years ago. In August 2018, and it's just been a great story to hear of his, and we're going to hear the next part of his story today, of his journey from art school to where he's at the moment. So welcome, Rossi. It's great to have you
here. Thank you for having me here, Darius. Thank you.
Over the last few years, we've kind of connected since that podcast and got to know each other, and I've had little glimpses into your story, and I'm really looking forward to hearing the latest chapter in your dyslexia journey. And I think it's really relevant to a lot of parents who are listeners, and maybe even teenagers. My daughter, for example, is in art school, or just leaving art school, or kind of not quite sure. She's taking a year out and creating her own art school, as it were. And so there's a lot of children who are really artistic, have gone into art school and are wondering what's next. And they'll be fascinated with how your story of what next is and how it was influenced positively and negatively by dyslexia. Learn a bit of the ups and downs, trials, tribulations and rewards in it all. So, Rossi, give us a little bit of a picture of where it all began in art school for you.
Well, certainly, in terms of where it all began, I went to art school still not knowing what I wanted to do or be or focus my art on. I just knew I wanted to work in art in some way. And I started off thinking that I should be a painter, because that is what being an artist in the most typical image is all about. I knew that I liked animation and that was where my strength was, but I wanted to see if I could make it as a painter. But no matter how hard I tried, my strengths as an artist just never really accumulated much with painting, compared to the huge talent that was all around me in that first year. And it wasn't until I had a little Christmas project came along where I was given the opportunity to animate and make a little animation with a friend who also wanted to animate. And we did that. It was a big hit, you know, amongst everyone in the class. It was so much fun to make and it was so enjoyable to make. That's when I realized that I wanted to tell stories. Animation really allows you to tell stories. For example, so I felt I was going to be an animator, and that's why I studied. I focused my art on animation for the next 3 years after that. But as I did animation, there was an idea that was always in the back of my mind that hadn't left me since school, and that was the Deco Comics thing, and this whole idea of revising through comics and through stories, and how much that helped me at my school, and how that gave me my first grade A. And really helped me understand information because it used pictures and story and all the things that I liked. So that was always in the back of my mind. And making a deco animation, I knew would always be a lot of hard work because animation takes so much time. And I knew that there was a lot of ideas I wanted to make, and a lot of them were to do with deco comics, that whole concept. And as much as I loved animation, the more it seemed like a very lengthy place to start with the things I wanted to do in life. And I wondered if it might be a better thing to work up to rather than to go straight into animation because of its time-consuming process. We have to draw a different drawing, 12 different drawings for every second, sometimes more, etc. And there was a lot of softwares you had to learn for it and stuff. So when I left school, I did art school. I did finish a short film I was working on, and I spent the whole of that, you know, between 2014 and 2015, finishing that short film while doing an artist of residency in Leith School of Art.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I did.
My daughter went to Leith School of Art.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, did she meet Phil?
Yes, Phil. She absolutely loved it. It's a fantastic place.
It really is. It's just a very wonderful, down-to-earth, run by good people. I loved it there. I really did. And I learned a lot there. Throughout the whole of studying at Dundee, Duncan of Jordanston, those 4 years, and that year being in our residency in Leith School of Art, I felt I learned lots about art and animation and how to finish projects and all these things, but I learned most about myself, I think. That's the growth experience of university is probably the most important one, in my opinion.
Did you learn about, I have a theory about university and art school. I suspect that art school can give you one of the most useful degrees possible, ironically, because it's actually teaching you about the creative process. And so much of what is giving value in the workplace over the next 10 to 20 years are those people who understand not just being creative, but understand how to go through the creative process to produce a result that benefits people. And that's a real process that is in addition to learning how to do art. It's about that whole creative process. And that I've observed with my daughter. I've always said to my daughter, Rosie, that her skill is she can paint with people. She loves doing art in a group, in a creative process. And often she ends up kind of coordinating it, not necessarily telling people what to do, but identifying what people are good at and saying, why don't you do this bit and how about that? And just kind of inspiring people into those kind of roles and then creating a communal piece of art. In fact, she did a communal piece of art in Leeds School of Art for Phil for his last year.
Really?
Yeah, you know, they did this montage, I think 20 years ago. And so Rosie decided, doesn't every student pick a piece of Leith and a defined area of Leith and then represent that artistically? Mm-hmm. And then they create a lithograph print that fits like a jigsaw puzzle. And then they put everyone's jigsaw puzzle together and they create a massive, like 20-foot piece of art that gets hand inked onto the paper, and they create like three or four pieces of art that are created about Leith and by the individuals. And that's what they did.
That's fantastic. So it was a complete collaboration of everyone working to the same goal, but bringing their own art to it.
That's right. She didn't coordinate it. She came up with the concept and as a first year, really, in it all, you know, a newbie, the tutors were gracious enough to say, you know, there's really something in this. And they just ran with it and implemented it and got the students to do it all. And it was really quite special to see.
That's amazing. And is she proud of that, I imagine?
Oh, yeah, very proud of that. And anyway, it kind of feeds in a little bit to your story, I think. It's like,
well, that's
how
what I was gonna
do
say.
You find your thing as an artist? And what I was find interesting here, my comment is, I think you don't just learn about yourself in art school. You often learn about the creative process,
yes,
with others as well.
Absolutely. Well, from what it sounded like, from what your daughter experienced, that's a hugely valuable lesson, because that's why I was there at Lee primarily, was to learn how to finish a project and to see the creative process through. It's taken for granted a lot of the time, but it is really hard to go from having that idea to practically making it happen and working with other people to help make it happen, because my animated film was too big for me to finish alone at first. But I managed to have other people helping me, and learning how to do that, all of it helped me do what I'd be doing after that residency. And so if she's learning that much earlier on in her journey, that's a fantastic thing to learn. And so understanding that creative process, understanding how to manage a project, how to start with the right how to communicate a project to other people, how to start with the right idea and build on it, you know, take it through the storyboard stages and animations case, and then add on the in-betweens and the colors and the inks and so on. All of that would be things I would learn that I would translate over to my comic projects when I left Leith School of Art. Because I treat making a comic very much like making an animation. I start with a storyboard and I break it down into cleanup, ink and color and all that stuff. And that experience of making a film at university and Leeds School of Art really helped me do that. So, yeah, learning how to complete a project there after Leeds is what really took me on to believing that I could do Deco Comics, giving me the confidence to feel that I could make that project and I could make that a reality. As well as previous experiences in my life where I would make comics for myself, knowing that I could make them and knowing that I had completed an animated film with them. And, you know, an animated film just helped give me the confidence to make a full-scale comics project where I would eventually be making one a month.
So that's where you started in this journey. What was your wake-up call, you know, that sort of woke you up to the next stage of your journey? Would you attribute it to an experience, a person, an idea? What was it that sort of woke you up to the next stage of the journey?
That's a really good question. I think what probably woke me up to it, feeling like this is something I have to do, was probably the hunger to make some of my ideas a reality. It was after university, so it was before my Leith School of Art residency, actually. I spent a lot of my spare time in Leith School of Art building up towards this comics project and how I could make it happen. So the wake-up call probably actually came in university and last year when I didn't complete that short film and I realized how hard making a production was and yet how I didn't want to just give up there and just resign to working on simple things because that was easier. That point was when I realized I really want to make some of these things I'm passionate about now, even if they are difficult. So I'm going to complete this film and I'm going to learn how to start this Deco Comics thing that I've had going on all my life. And the point where I think there's a point after that, at the end of Leith School of Art, where I was galvanized to do that and get started on that as soon as possible. That was when I had completed my short film. The short film is called Dominic, by the way. Your viewers can find it online if you type in Dominic and Rossi Stone.
Okay, we'll put it in the show notes as well so they can have a quick link.
Yeah, please do. But once I completed that, my brother and my mother wanted me to go to film school after that, to like an advanced film school that my older brother had gone to. And that was a point that really galvanized me to think I really want to start Deco Comics now, because all throughout school, struggling with getting questions right at school, getting poor grades in my exams, interpreting the world through a bit of a strange way compared to what you consider the norm way, and sort of saying the wrong thing in class and in conversations and all that stuff. I'd gone through a lot of my life feeling like I didn't have very much free will of my own, because if I did things the way I felt like doing them, I was going to get them wrong and so on. Mm. And I always had these ideas I wanted to make, but I always assumed that everyone else's opinion of what I should be doing was right. Mm. But when I came up with the Deco Comics concept, that was me coming up with it for myself back in high school when I used it for my exams. I tried it my parents and teachers' ways. It had been appreciated, but it didn't help. But coming up with the comics was me thinking of it for myself, and it led to a great result for myself. It turned out that listening to myself wasn't a bad idea. It really helped give me some self-esteem. And then I kind of went back to my ways, but at university, that new desire to be thinking for myself and making my own decisions came up again. And making that short film and making it the way I wanted to, even though it didn't work out, that was again me making my own choice and trying to make a film in my own way and exploring this whole feeling of not just doing it the way that people want me to do it, and which I know there is a balance to. You absolutely need to listen to people who are wise to a subject and who know you well or know their craft well and so on, but just being able to explore this whole thing of being able to make my own ideas on my own terms was really important. And so when it came to Leith School of Art and finishing my short film, my brother and my mother both loved the film and they wanted me to go and do film school. And that's the point where I really felt, no, I don't want that. I really want to finally make this Deco Comics idea that's been going on in my head for so long. I want to make that happen. I don't want to go and study film and become a filmmaker. This is what I want to begin with. This is what I'm passionate about. This is an idea I'm really excited about.
What was the challenge you set yourself then? So obviously, you know, we're now in the challenge stage of the story arc. You know, we've got where you began in the art school. You've got the wake-up call during art school and with this movie, and you're realizing, I want to follow my own path here. What was the challenge you set yourself?
The challenge I set myself was I had to basically get this started and see how people reacted to it.
So for those people who are listening that have no idea what Deco Comics is, how did you picture it? You know, what were you kind of, I mean, we know what Deco Comics is right now, but how were you picturing it then?
So back then, it wasn't even called Deco. It was called Educoms in my head, which was supposed to be for educational comics. And my challenge was, I guess, to prove that that worked, that you could actually educate other people besides myself through comics, and it could actually be really fun and effective. So the challenge I set myself was to test that out and see if it worked, essentially. I took it to schools. I made prototype versions, some of which I'd made while I was at Leith School of Art. And I, you know, and I saw how the pupils responded. There were some schools who were very happy to cooperate with me there and let me test this way of teaching on schools. And it was received really well. And people seemed to answer the questions correctly based on what they'd read in the comics. They enjoyed them. They remembered them. They wanted to read them again. And that was a big, exciting time in my challenge, realizing that this wasn't just a pipe dream of something that I'm wondering I could do. I was so worried in a way that this concept would just not work and this thing I was excited about would fall through. But to see it work and to see the thing that worked for me worked for other people as well, that was a very good place to start my journey.
So in effect, for people who are listening, one of our biggest issues as dyslexics is reading comprehension tests. And in effect, when I've got your Deco Comics here, I've got a copy of each of them at home, actually. And what I've noticed is you've kind of done them as reading comprehensions. So basically, you read two pages of a comic, and then at the bottom, there are questions. And it's just like a reading comprehension, but it's not like a reading comprehension, because a typical reading comprehension, typical issue I see with the students that my tutors teach, is that children can read. If they've got dyslexia, they can read. They've learned how to read. But capturing all the details that are necessary to answer the questions can be elusive.
Mm.
But what you were finding, I think, was when they read these stories, they could answer all the questions.
Totally.
Now, that's not to be underestimated. And anyone with a dyslexic child will know, oh, wow, that's a big deal. They could actually answer the questions correctly. It's not that the thing is, when you do reading comprehension, it's not that you don't understand the story. It's just that you've not known what details to focus in on because everything seems significant. But with the comics, you emphasize what's important, visualize it, and the child's visualizing it all the way, and it's being stored into from their working memory straight into their short-term and long-term memory because they're visualizing it, and then they're free to answer the question. So that's quite a significant discovery, really.
Thank you for pointing that out, because maybe I didn't think enough about it at the time, but it was really significant. The fact that what I was really keen to find out was if this worked for people who weren't dyslexic as well. I was keen to see if it helped those who were dyslexic. But the kids who weren't dyslexic as well were also enjoying it and remembering it for as later as 2 months later, you know? And I couldn't really tell who was dyslexic and who wasn't based on the questions I asked the kids in the prototype stage and the answers they gave, you know? It was that effective. So, yeah, it is reading comprehension, and it gives... But I truly believe that, you know, having dyslexia is just a label given to people who interpret information in a slightly different way. And there's a whole umbrella term to those variations, but all Deco Comics does at the bare minimum is it gives more than just words. It gives pictures to understand that comprehension with. It gives points of narrative to understand it with. It gives color as well. It breaks the information up into pieces rather than giving you it all at once. And that is much easier for a lot of people who have dyslexia, as I found through the testing, but also I would even go further to say that by giving that to someone who's dyslexic as a tool, they might be able to remember those things a lot more effectively than certain people who read normally, you know? So it's not just a case of oh, it's making the reading easier. It's giving the reading in a different format, which some people are going to do okay with, some people it's not going to be for at all, and some people are going to excel and fly with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
This podcast is sponsored by dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com, which helps you organize yourself creatively with a productivity system for Apple devices.
So where are we at now? We're at 2020. You left art school when?
So I left art school in 2015.
2015, so 5 years ago.
Yes.
You went to Leeds School of Art and you finished that for a year.
Oh, sorry, no, I've given you misinformation. I left art school at 2014. I went 14. To Leeds School of Art that year and finished there in 2015.
Okay, and then you took on the Deco Challenge.
In 2015.
5 years ago, okay.
And then I started the crowdfunding campaign that would launch us into a business on Kickstarter. That was to make our first couple of Deco Comics issues, proper magazines of this technique. That was in early 2016.
Okay. How much did you raise?
We managed to raise £13,000 of our £10,000 goal.
Fantastic. And then what happened?
Well, once we'd been given the green light, essentially, because we could afford to, me and a couple of artists I'd known from art school who had asked to be part of the project, we all made the first 24 stories within these two 36-page issues. And it was great fun. And we launched them in September, took them to the Scottish Learning Festival. And from the word go, they were well received. They were
How long did it take you to make those two comics?
So it took us about, well, we the crowdfunding campaign finished in April. So we started working on it in May. So it took us 4 months to make them.
Okay, 3 artists, 4 months to make them. Were you full-time at it, just head down?
Yeah, well, essentially, yes. It was all of our main work at the time.
Great.
And yeah, we had a motive. We were galvanized. We had a deadline to work to. We actually ran out of money by getting us into the Scottish Learning Festival. We had to do another mini crowdfunding campaign just to raise a little bit of printing money. But once we did that, it was all systems go.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So we are up to, what is that, the end of 2016?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, that was September 2016.
Okay. So what happened next once you did these two comics? Because you've got a lot more now.
Well, we do, yeah. So towards the end of 2016, in December, we won the Young Edge Award, and that gave us some money to go to a big education festival called the BET Show. And we went there. We met some great contacts, including an agent from a big publishing company, HarperCollins. And, you know, we were learning things all the time, though. Like, that never... I had assumptions in my head that the comics were just going to sell like hotcakes because parents would see it, schools would see it. It turns education into comic strips, and that's all you need. And it looks super fun. That's going to be an easy sell. And I never stopped learning. I learned from early on, and I kept on learning how to manage more realistic expectations, because we did go to the BET Show, but we didn't come back with bags and bags of sales. We did make some amazing contacts, though, and those contacts did pay off the money it took to get there. But that's I want to mention that because the journey from the early start had ups and downs that way. So it had downs like that, where we were expecting to make lots of sales at the BET Show, and it didn't work out. But then an up was that towards the end of 2017, after releasing our third Deco Comic issue, we were set up with HarperCollins. They got back to us in the end, and they wanted to work with us. And it's through their funding and their partnership that we were able to make a fourth Deco Comic issue. That was exciting. But then another down came along. It turns out comics were a bit too difficult for HarperCollins to house with their system that they had going. It's a big thing to do with small companies versus big corporations. So storing the comics was difficult. They used hardbacks. It wasn't ready for schools at that time. It was still just a mishmash of subjects, mainly best for parents to buy for their children or people to read themselves. So that was another down, but it went up again because even though that relationship was good and didn't work out, HarperCollins were still partners with us. They still liked us. So they helped us in just giving us some little support with like information validation and all that stuff with the next part of our journey, which was 2018, where we would start making a new comic every month. And that was the beginning of the monthly issues, starting with issue 5 in April 2018. And we would release a new one every month up until December.
Up until last December.
So up until December of 2018. So again, okay, with the ups and downs, it was great. We had a subscription service now. Parents could subscribe to our comics and they would receive a monthly comics. It was just like something like the Beano or some other monthly magazine. It felt like we'd really made a new brand and a new comic. And it was amazing. We were changing education with each issue. Every difficult topic within the, you know, different comics cover ages 9 to 12. Key stage 2 is what you call that in England. But we try and make the subjects relevant to whether you're in the UK or the United States or anywhere. Turning notoriously difficult subjects or boring subjects in maths and literacy into really fun comic stories, it just felt wonderful. And like we were going to do this to the whole curriculum for every school age range. And the company still had momentum. We were still building excitement. But then, you know, like with the ups, another down came along. It turned out that this monthly comic system we were doing, which was built off our own backs, was too difficult to sustain. That was another thing I learned the hard way. It was costing us too much to make an issue, and it was taking much longer than expected to build a big enough fan base, because, you know, we were still very unknown at that time, to build a big enough fan base in order to sustain the production, to pay us the money we needed in order to make these new comics. So we had to come to a difficult decision at the end of 2018. And that was when we just released our app as well, Deco Reader. We just thought, we've got to stop the monthly output for now until we're in a better position to continue it again. And that's what brought us to having Deco Comics issues 1 to 12. And yeah, I'll leave it to a question to you before continuing.
Okay, so how many Deco Comics are there now?
So there are 12 Deco Comics issues. Okay. So still, we haven't made a new issue since 2018. Okay. But so we have 12. Made new material.
Okay, got you. So there's, you know, it's a lot. You know, when you say 12, it's actually, you know, there's a lot packed into every single story within the 12. So it's kind of like 12 issues, and there are how many subjects in each issue?
And there are 12 subjects in, well, subjects roughly, can vary.
Yeah, roughly 12.
There are 12 stories. Topics, 12 uh-huh. topics in every issue. Every issue, there's 3 maths, there's 3 English, okay, and there's usually a smattering of science and history and all that stuff in there.
It's very well thought out. So it's 144 topics you've covered in
Absolutely.
Those. Yeah, okay. And the nature of comics, you know, you're distilling a lot into the visual format, you know. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what would be really interesting was let's look under the hood a little bit, okay? Let's talk about, you know, where did you see your dyslexic strengths at play, and where did you find your dyslexic challenges playing in that journey? Would be really fascinating to hear for other young, you know, artists breaking out into making their art pay, you know?
Certainly.
So could you close the loop from the last couple of years, what's happened since those 12 issues, 2018 to now?
Yes, very happily, because I wouldn't want to end on that note where I just say we had to stop making the comics.
Yes, yes.
It has gotten positive again. Like I say, I want to tell everyone who's listening to this that ups and downs are all parts of learning, and they're all parts of growing, whether you're growing a business, whether you're growing your art portfolio, whether you're growing your career or your family life or just yourself. We haven't made a new Deco Comic issue since then, but it's actually been great because we've spent a lot of that time making educational comics for other companies. Oh. And we've done the workshops that I do where I get to talk about the Deco technique, this new way of teaching through comics and entertainment and sensory things. That has gone really popular. And I've now gone to well over 100 schools and institutions now talking about that stuff, even internationally. I still have been able to release new Decum products. For example, we've done one about drawing. We're going to be releasing one about mental health and well-being very soon. And, you know, what I've learned is how to do is to take my time a bit more. I think a lot of the reason why we ran into some of those earlier difficulties was by rushing it, sometimes being in a hurry to get into those monthly issues. And I don't regret it at all, but it's all just been very good. And one thing we weren't when we were doing the monthly issues is we weren't sustainable. The business wasn't earning in enough money. Now the business is in a much more sustainable position. We can support ourselves a lot better. And we've learned so much about what products to make and what comics to make and how to communicate the Deco vision to a lot more institutions and so on. So we've learned lots. It's been a really valuable experience, and we're still living our dream and doing the things we want to do. But how this has been a challenge through dyslexia, I believe that was the question you were asking.
Yeah, so that's really great to hear that whole, you know, big picture over the last 6 years. And also since the last time you came on the podcast 2 years ago, it's been really interesting to close that loop and see the whole story. So I think the next thing I'd really like to talk about is, what were your most influential learning moments? Was it a group? Was it a person? And could you tie that in with your dyslexia? You know, like, does dyslexia still affect you? You know, is a question. You know, children might be listening to this, parents might be listening to it. You can read, you can do all sorts of things, but does your dyslexia still affect you? How does it?
Yes, absolutely. My dyslexia is part of me. I see it as the source of the reason why I find certain things difficult, but it's also the flip side is the reason why I'm pretty good at other things, like looking at things outside the box, being creative, having a very strong attachment to visuals and so on. It still affects me today in that I still find reading difficult, as in not as easy as other people. I can read books for fun now. That is a big leap for me. I can even read business contracts if you give me enough time, but I still have to find ways around it. You know, thankfully I have a small team now, so I can get other people to help me with large amounts of reading if I've not got the time to absorb it properly. The disorganization is still part of my dyslexia. It's where your stuff comes in very handy, Darius. I at school never learned how to do a mind map properly. It was just another way to get my disorganized mind onto paper. And that still affects me in business today and the work I do. Sometimes figuring out how to get everything done can be a bit of a mess, just organizing it in a way that makes sense to myself. But my creativity that I think my dyslexia really bolsters, that part of me that wants to stay more in my imagination, that part that responds really well to pictures and visuals and sensory things, that still helps me. For example, with my organization, I find fun creative activities to help me get around it and to help me sort things out, you know. You know, I used to love playing those strategy war games growing up, like, you know, Warcraft and Total War and all that stuff. And just last month, I turned a big schedule I had to get done in August into a battle plan where my soldiers were split into five. Each soldier represented 5 minutes of time I had to spend. And I divided them into platoons. Each platoon was an hour. And, you know, the bases they had to conquer were the tasks I had to get done, you know. And that was really fun. And I gamified it, and it's very similar to what I did with Deco. And I like to change it all the time and not do the same thing. So just like in school, there are things that are still difficult and that I'm getting better at each time I tackle them, but they're by no means easy yet. But I'm still using that problem-solving side of myself that I discovered in school to find ways around them. And I don't get it right all the time, but I've got the happiness and confidence and self-esteem with myself now to give them a try and not give up and not think I'm useless or it's not worth it. So yeah. And does that answer your question well enough? Or
it does. I think also one of the things I've noticed with you is, compared to me, I think I've often had a struggle with feeling like I have to be able to do it all myself. Mm. And what I see in you is humility to be able to say, I can't do all of this myself. I want to learn from you. I want to work with you. I want to, you know, and I think with dyslexia, you can go one of two ways, you know, and you've chosen that path, which is I'm going to learn from others, I'm going to work with others, I'm going to collaborate. And I think, if I'm honest with myself, I've had to learn it the hard way and start to, you know, learn how to delegate and collaborate much more later on in life, rather than going down the learner track.
I wouldn't be too hard on yourself there, because I definitely have had to get better at delegating and not doing it myself. I certainly had that side of me. I mean, I guess I had to come to the realization that there was lots I couldn't do myself early on with animation, because when I was studying animation at university, you realize quite quickly just how long this takes. And you realize that animation is just going to be a team process one way or the other. So almost as if I had no choice, I had to learn how to delegate and to share responsibilities and so on. But I still had that part of me that felt, I have to tackle this myself because I'm the only one who knows how to do it the way I want it to. And it's through the living and learning experience of Deco that I've had to learn more and more. No, I don't know better in that situation. And that person is smarter than me in that area. That person has more talent in that area. It's, I think what you're talking about, the creative process, that's really helped me learn how to be more open to collaboration and people's help over the years. The fact that, you know, I knew that I couldn't do the art of Deco by myself. I knew the quality I wanted, but I knew I couldn't execute that myself. I could do certain parts of it, but I needed to bring in other artists who were better at that than me. And that again helped me realize more and more just how much I needed help. But I've certainly been in situations where I've been trying to do too many emails myself, trying to do too many tasks solo, being overambitious with my time. I think that can be quite a common factor with dyslexia and overambition when it comes to self-work. It doesn't always, but it can be that way. And one thing I've learned for myself more in recent years is how to work smarter, not harder. And by that, all I mean is it's nothing to do with intelligence. I just mean it's okay to find hard work is good, but it doesn't need to rule your life. You can use that problem-solving part of you. You can find a way around it. You can save your hard work and energy. Your hard work costs energy and costs time. You can be careful of how you spend that. So like I say, I'm very humbled that you consider me to have that humility. And I like to think I am a lot better at that now. But I think, you know, I've certainly had those difficulties myself growing up, where I've tried to do everything myself and I've had to learn through trial and error and through the creative process in my own way.
So, I've got to ask you the question, what's your experience of mind mapping in that journey? What's it been, mind mapping your over the last 6 years? What's your journey been like?
So my journey with mind mapping has been, it's been exciting and interesting. You've taught me how to mind map in a way that is much better than any way I've been mind mapping before. The only problem is I haven't mastered it yet. I haven't dedicated enough time to properly getting my head around it so I can use it intuitively. But every time where I've sat in with a session of yours or I've watched one of your videos, it all makes sense. I have to admit to you, for now, and for the past few years, I've still been stuck in my old ways where I do go to a mind map and I try and spider diagram it, and it works to a degree. It helps get my thoughts onto paper, but it does end up becoming that mind mess again. And that's just one of these things where it's like exercise. I know the Bullet Map Academy way of doing it is going to help me fix that once and for all. I've just not dedicated the time properly to fix it yet, but I really couldn't recommend your stuff highly enough. Whenever bullet maps and mind maps come up in my workshops, I always recommend them to Bullet Map Academy. And one day, Darius, one day I will sit down in one of your sessions and properly master this.
Yeah, I'll nail you down for half an hour and get you through to go through the steps, and you'll just run with it. But I know what it's like, you know, you just get so busy with all sorts of different things. So let's look at advice. I want you to imagine, you know, maybe there's other parents here listening. Like, I've got a daughter who's, you know, 21 and she's trying to figure out her artistic journey. So there are parents who are wondering, how do I help my child. And then there are other teenagers, 20-somethings maybe, who are thinking, gosh, you know, I'd like to hear about his journey and what I can learn from it. So what kind of advice would you give if you've got any?
For teenagers in particular?
Yeah.
I would say the biggest kicker of dyslexia in the world we live in, and it's regardless of whether the context is with your career or business or what you want to do in life or what grades you want to achieve in school, whatever it is, the biggest kicker, the biggest difficulty with dyslexia is confidence, in my opinion. Being in a, for example, in a school system, for me at least, in a school system when every day you would go in knowing you're not going to be good at stuff, knowing that the main tasks that most of schoolwork is built up from, reading, writing, listening on worksheets and textbooks and class lectures, knowing that you're going to struggle with those, and knowing that the idea of intelligence isn't marked around the things you're good at, and that you're going to get noticed in quite a negative way for that. That was the thing that I kept on replaying in my head. And maybe I exaggerated it more at times in my head, made a bigger deal of it than it was. And other times I didn't. There was times when I got bullied for it or reprimanded for it. So yeah, giving into that lack of confidence or believing that lack of confidence that there's something wrong with you or that you won't be able to achieve what you want to achieve, that is something to look out for. Don't listen to it. I eventually found by embracing who I was and by embracing what I enjoy and what I liked, I like drawing and I like stories and making comics and all that stuff, rather than being ashamed of that, if you embrace that part of yourself that you know you're good at and that's where your skills are and your interests are, so much confidence will come out of nowhere that you didn't realize you had. And so much enjoyment by enjoying your work more, by finding a way to enjoy it more, you will also get more confidence. By building up that confidence by embracing yourself, you'll be able to tackle any challenge that dyslexia might throw at you or the world might throw at you. It doesn't matter. You know, just because you find reading difficult doesn't mean that that's got to be a barricade for you. If it's an obstacle, you will find a way around that obstacle. But first things first is find a way. If you're feeling a lack of confidence, stop that right now. Find a way to think about what you enjoy, think about what you like, and find a way to use that to smash your confidence barrier.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that, Rossi. Rossi, it has been fantastic to have you on the podcast. Thank you for sharing your story so far. Maybe we'll have you back in 3 years' time when you're the next part.
Darius, you can have me back anytime you like. Hearing you there talking about the clutch control and the car analogy, I remember you telling me about it before. It is so why I think we naturally gel together. Like Deco's philosophy is so in line with like Bullet Map Academy's like idea. Why teach in one particular way when you're going to get different kinds of learners, different kinds of cars and so on. Basically, I just want to compliment you on your wisdom. You are a wonderful, excellent teacher, very valuable to all the people out there who have dyslexia and are struggling with it. And I just thank you for having me on your podcast. It has been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure, Rossi. Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for having me.
See ya.
Bye.
This podcast is sponsored by dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com. It's my day job when I'm not hosting this podcast. Tell me, do you know what you want to achieve in the workplace, but you're struggling with how to achieve it? Maybe you suspect some traits of dyslexia are getting in the way. Well, that's where Dyslexia Productivity Coaching comes in, because we give you a simple productivity system for your Apple devices that harnesses the creativity that comes with your dyslexia. It includes proven methods like note-taking, reminders, speech-to-text, mind mapping, and more, all tailored to your needs. It'll free up your time and help you achieve outstanding results. Book a complimentary call to discuss it with me, and if you do it soon, I may also be available to coach you personally via Zoom. So don't be shy, go to dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com or swipe up and book it now.